We would like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Locks and Learn in memory of Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah bas Avram, and Karen's brother Yeshua ben Shimon Dov, as well as today is the yahrzeit of Chippy's father, Shlomo David ben Moshe, all the neshamos of everyone specifically who yahrzeits today or in general should have an aliyah. Okay, today we are doing something a little bit different. The context, the broader context, is Pirkei Avos. But we're about to do four, not today, but we're going to, over the next week or 2 weeks, 3 weeks, do four Mishnayos, three of which are from Beis Hillel, and one of which is from Beit Shammai. And since these are two of the, you know, Hillel and Shammai are two of the greatest sages that we, you know, that are famous, well-known, what I wanted to do was take some time to see some of the background in terms of their disputes throughout the Talmud, throughout the Gemara, and perhaps that'll help us understand the Mishnayos better, perhaps not, but at the very least we'll have a better understanding of who they were in terms of their religious and spiritual upbringing, or their religious and spiritual ideas. There's just tremendous different outlooks, spiritual, philosophical outlooks that both sages had and both the schools of the sages continued throughout the subsequent generations. So in terms of the historical context, anybody remember where we're about? Shmaya v'Avtalion was last week. Shmaya v'Avtalion, the Mishnah tells us, then Hillel and Shammai got the Mesorah, the tradition from Shmaya v'Avtalion. What century are we approximately in? Close to zero, but we're still in the first century BCE. Herod is basically reigning over the Jewish people at the time. In terms of Herod, I think we spoke about this a little bit last week, but just a 1-2 minute background. He was one of these Hashmonaic kings who wasn't necessarily the greatest spiritual role model, but in terms of his political and the peace that the Jews enjoyed at that particular time, he was close to the Roman government, and they gave him free rein to basically do what he wanted. And because of that, there was a tranquility within the air. And when there's tranquility, that allows a number of things. It allows learning. So it allows sages to learn. I don't have to worry about, am I running from people? Am I not running from people? Am I going to be, is the other governments going to come and destroy us? That's one aspect, although it's not fully true because Herod himself was against the sages and the Gemara says tried to kill them. So it wasn't, not completely true. But definitely it was true is that what do we know Herod for? What's he famous for? So he built a lot. He renovated the temple. He built different cities, Caesarea. He built Masada, right? So Herod was somebody who spent time building the infrastructure and different cities throughout Israel. Okay. Now, in terms of Hillel and Shammai, where did they come from? Do we know anything about their background before they were famous? So Shammai, we know very little about. Hillel, we know a little bit more. So source number one is a very famous Gemara. The Gemara describes Hillel at the time there, and this is going to be an important theme that's going to be running. And just to introduce what we're going to do today is that we're going to look at various themes that the machlokeses, the disputes between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, seem to be hitting on these core themes that different worldviews and these machlokeses, these disputes, permeate throughout generations after them, even to this day. So as we go through the sources, you're going to see like, okay, I identify with that. That's a little bit. I see other people identify with that. There's different, they basically provide different paradigms for religious worship that continues throughout the generations. So let's see Hillel's background, source number one. So Amru Alav is Gemara and Yuma. You have the Aramaic on the right-hand side, the English translation from the Sansino on the left-hand side. Amru Alav al Hillel Hazakin, Shebechol Yom V'Yom Hayaosa U'Mistaker Betrapik, So he used to work hard in order to make a tropic a day. He took half of that tropic, and now notice, in order to get into the yeshiva, so you thought yeshiva tuition was a problem now, apparently it was a problem back then also. In order to get into the yeshiva, you, even adults who wanted to learn, had to pay. half a tropic apparently, and he used to give that to the base medrash, and the other half he used to provide for his family. One day, pamachas lo matzali staker, he couldn't find a job. He was out of work, unemployed. Below he nichu shomer beis medrash likanes. So he used to come to the base medrash every day. He didn't have money today. So what would you do? Okay, come in. Later, not gonna charge you. I'll pay you later. Whatever. No, you're not allowed in. You can't come into the base medrash. So what did Hillel do? So Hillel's not like, okay, I'll go home and relax. So Allah v'nisla v'yashav al pi aruba. So he went on top. He climbed the base medrash and went onto the skylight. And he's looking through the skylight, trying to listen carefully as to what's going on in the base medrash. He wanted to hear again from Shmai Batayim, who were the sages from last week. Amru also ayom erev Shabbos ayah, so it was erev Shabbos. It was kufas tevas ayah, so it was the winter months. V'yard alav shelag min hashamayim, so it started snowing. Kishalla amru hashachar, it became daytime. Amru lo Shmai Batayim, Avtayim afi b'chol yom habayis meir. So this is apropos for today. Is every day it's very light outside. But today, by Yom Afel, it's very dark. Okay? Shema Yom Hamaunanu, maybe it's a cloudy day. So he sits in and they looked up, wrote the Musa Adam Haruba. They saw there was the outline of a person in the skylight. So they went up, Alub Matsu Allah Rom Shalosh Amos Shaleg. So there was this gigantic pile of snow on top of him. Parku, Virchitsu, Visihu, Veshivu, Kenegan Amadura. So they got him, you know, they dried him off, they put him next to the fire. Amru Roy Zelachal Lavas Shabbos. For him, the Shabbos, it's worthy to be Machal Shabbos because he put his life on the line literally to learn Torah. So we have a little bit of a background as to who Hillel was. He was not a person of means, apparently, at least in the beginning of his life, didn't have much money. And he really, really wanted to learn. What do you see about the environment of learning at the time? It was very elitist to some extent, that the poor people weren't allowed in. It wasn't open door policy. You had to pay to get in. Shammai, again, we don't know that much about his background, no origin story in the Gemara. But let's see a little bit about their differences in how they present halacha, how they learn halacha. So when it comes to halacha, when it comes to the Jewish law, so there's this big machlokas between the schools of Hillel and the schools of Shammai, and again, this pervades and permeates throughout the Gemara in different methods throughout the generations. How do we determine what the halacha is? Is the halacha, is the primary source of the halacha based just solely on tradition? Do we just say, what did my Rebbe tell me, and that's what I'm going to do? Or do we say that there's room for analysis? There's room for reason. There's room for using our own methodologies, our own brains, within the framework of halacha. Again, there's rules like Kal v'chomer, etc. That we can't just make up our own. We can't use, you know, secular philosophy and say, therefore, I am going to decide the halacha as X, Y, or Z. So it's within the framework of Torah. But how much can I create new laws based on my own, within the framework of Torah, thought processes? And what you're going to see is that Shammai and his school was very classically traditional. It all comes based on what did my teacher tell me? What does the law say before me? What's my precedent? And Hillel was more of, let's try to innovate. Let's try to use our logic. Let's try to use our brain to figure out what the halacha should be. Again, I'm emphasizing it probably too much to this point, but as we go on throughout the generations, we're going to see that this machlokes pervades. When we get to Rabbi Akiva, right? So we know, I'm just going to give a little bit of a glimpse just to show you how this keeps going. Rabbi Akiva, how many generations later is Rabbi Akiva? When's Rabbi Akiva live? When's the Bar Kokhba rebellion? 130-ish CE, so you're talking a good 200 years later, and we know there's a famous Gemara that says that Rabbi Akiva was sitting and he was darshaning. He was using his own intellectual capacities to try to figure out what are these little teeny crowns on the top of the letters mean. And the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu came and had no idea what he was talking about. That Gemara itself, and again we'll see this probably later in a few months, is that Gemara is this same point. Is that, do we base ourselves based on, if you're going to tell me there's a halacha that Moshe didn't know? we're passing on tradition from generation to generation, it should have to be that Moshe knows everything. And that Gemara seems to be pointing out that at least according to Rabbi Akiva, presumably following in the ways of Beis Hillel, is that no, we're allowed to use the exegetical rules. I don't know if that's how you make that word in that form, but you're allowed to darshan in more classic ways in order to create new halachos. This is a pervasive concept. So let's see the two main sources, one for Beis Shammai and the second for Beis Hillel. So this is Beis Shammai's traditional view, source number two. The Mishnah in Sukkah says, Nashim ba'abadim biktanim p'tur min ha-sukkah. So women, slaves, children do not have to sit in a sukkah. It's a mitzvah aseh shazman grama. We can talk about that more at a different time, but for now we're just going to take that for granted. She'eino tzarech lomar le... What does that say? Le'imo, sorry. She'eino tzarech le'imo. So, sorry. Starting again. Nashim v'avadim k'tanim p'turim min ha-sukkah. Period. Next. Katan, if it's a child, she'eino tzarech le'imo, who no longer needs his mother, chayev b'sukkah. So, I don't know what age that would be. What would you say? 4, 5, 2 months, right? So the katan who doesn't need his mother any longer... you always need your mother, I know that. But in terms of being able to go out on his own, so that katan is chayiv b'sukkah. As a little kid, I don't know what you're talking about, 3, 4 years old, chayiv in sukkah, has to go out. It's 9 o'clock at night, just becomes sukkah, it doesn't matter, he has to go out and eat in the sukkah. Maisa v'yalda kalaso shel Shammai azakein. So Shammai's daughter-in-law gave birth to a child. Ufiches es ha-ma'aziva v'sichech al-gabe amita b'shvil katan. And what did he do? He took away the roof, basically. Did renovations in the house. Took away the roof and made on top of this kid's crib, he made the schach. So here's Shammai taking a strict, some interpret it as a strict chumradik view that we're going to be very makbid on specific halachos, even if it doesn't necessarily... it doesn't make logical sense, I don't know, but it's a tradition, and this is a tradition, and we're going to take it to the extreme. This Mishnah personifies Beis Shammai. What about Beis Hillel? What about Hillel? So Hillel, in source number two, it's a little bit of a long source. I'm considering not going through it inside for the most part, and just bringing out some main points. So the source basically is, this is another... Hillel origin story to an extent. It's a little bit later than the previous story, and there was Hillel came from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and remember the Beis HaMikdash is still around, so they're still bringing sacrifices, still bringing korbanos, and the Gemara says that there was a halacha that the Bnei Basera, who were the sort of the sages in charge at the time, forgot. They didn't know what the halacha was, and that halacha is, can I bring a Korban Pesach, if Pesach falls out on Shabbos, do I bring that sacrifice on the Sabbath? Do I bring the Korban Pesach on Shabbos? They didn't remember. They didn't know. Was that the law? Was that not the law? So Hillel comes, and there's rumors come that there's this sage who was a big student of Shmaya v'Avtalion, who maybe he knows the answer to this question. So they approach Hillel, and they ask him, do you know, klumata yodea ima Pesach doches haShabbos? Do you know if the Korban Pesach is, I'm around if you want to follow online. I'm just going to excerpt little bits and pieces here and there, but if you want to follow, I'm around 10 or 11 lines down in the Aramaic. Do you know if Pesach, the Korban Pesach, is doches haShabbos, meaning I can bring it on Shabbos? Usually you're not allowed to shech things, you're not allowed to kill things on Shabbos. Can I bring the Korban Pesach? So Amar Lahem, so Hillel says, this isn't the only thing that we shecht in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. What are we allowed to shecht on Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash? So any korban that's related to Shabbos, the korban tamid, if there's a holiday, we bring those korbanos. So yes, why is that different than everything else? V'chi Pesach echad yesh lanu b'shana shedoches haShabbos. Now when he says Pesach, he means in general, are there not korbanos that we bring? Of course we bring korbanos on Shabbos. There's yoser mimasayim psachim. There's over 200 korbanos that we bring on Shabbos. So Amrullah, they ask him, so that's not enough for them. Notice, again, we're playing with tradition versus logic here. They say to him, that's not enough. Minayin lecha. How do you know that? So he says back to them, so I'm going to bring you a textual proof. We're around 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the bottom. It says, Ne'emar, Moado b'Pesach. It says the word Moed when it comes to Pesach, and it says Moado b'Tamid. The word Moed, Moado, when it comes to the Korban Tamid, which we do bring on Shabbos. So he makes, since there's a connection of the words, anybody know what this is called? When you have one word, so you have one word in one place and one word in a different place, we're going to connect laws between the two. It's called Gzeirah Shavah. So he says, just like it says Moed by the Korban Tamid, and that you're allowed to bring on Shabbos, so too, when it comes to Korban Pesach, you're allowed to bring that on Shabbos. That's number one. We have a Gzeirah Shavah. So we're using biblical tools to use our own logic to figure out the law. But that's not enough. It's almost like a parody is the wrong word. It's almost like an extreme example. He's like, I'm not even going to stop there. I'm going to go even further. Not only do I have a Gzeirah Shavah, what else do I have? I have a Kal V'chomer. Kal V'chomer is a logical proof. Meaning, listen to the proof. V'od Kal V'chomer hu, uma tamid, a tamid she'ein anush kares, doches ha-shabbos. When it comes to a korban tamid, the punishment of not bringing it is not kares, being excised, being cut off, being killed by God for not bringing the korban tamid. If you miss the korban tamid, there's no punishment of kares. But what if you don't bring a korban Pesach? There is a punishment of kares. So if the korban tamid, which doesn't seem to be so strict, there's no strict punishment, pushes off Shabbos, Pesach, which has, if I don't bring, has a really strict punishment, all the more so should push off Shabbos. So this is his second proof. It's a Kal V'chomer. We have a Gzeirah Shavah, and we have a Kal V'chomer. What happens? Last line on the page, in the Aramaic, Miyad Hoshivu Barosh Uminiyu Nasi Aleim. They were blown away. Look at this guy. He can use his brain. He can make logical arguments to provide halachic conclusions, and they appointed him as the head. Flip the page. The story doesn't end. Now we have a little bit of a backlash. So what happens? So he starts teaching Hilchos Pesach. He's now the head. They now love him. And they started to some present this as a little bit of arrogance, and we'll see a little bit later that Hillel was the paradigm of humility, but he starts yelling at them a little bit. He starts criticizing them. He says, Hischil mekantron bedvarim. He starts making fun of them. He says, why don't you remember any of this stuff? He's like teaching the audience, and they're like, what? You guys should know what you're talking about. Why don't you know anything? What should you have done? And what's the reason why you don't know anything? Because you didn't serve Shmaya and Avtalion enough. You should have served your Rebbeim more than you did. If it wasn't for that, you would have known more. Okay, so that's his little bit of a shtuck to them. Now, but here's the repercussions to that. They ask him a new question. Amrulo Rebbe, we don't remember. What if you don't remember? So you're saying you could check the Korban Pesach on Shabbos. What if I don't remember the knife? Right? So can I bring the knife, can I carry the knife on Shabbos in order to check the Korban Pesach? Now what happens? It's reminiscent of Moshe Rabbeinu to some extent. He forgets the law. Right? So Moshe gets angry, forgets the law. Here Hillel has a little bit of arrogance, forgets the law. He says, Amar lahen halachazu shamati. I heard this. I know what you're talking about. Vishachachti, but I forgot. But he says, I trust the Jewish people. Isn't it? Now this is a sign of humility. I trust the Jewish people that they will remember what they need to do. And the next day, again it's Shabbos, or that day, whatever the story is, doesn't say, when they start coming to bring the Korban Pesach, and they forgot the knife, so they saw that what did they used to do? They used to take the knife, and they used to hide the knife like in the sheep. Not like stabbing the sheep, but like in the wool, right? So now it's the sheep carrying the knife. So he saw that's what people did. And he says, Ra Maisa V'Nizkar Halacha, he sees that, he remembers that's what the Halacha is. But look at the kicker, the final line, in the statement, V'amar kach mekublani mipishmaya v'avtalion. This is what I received. Tradition. Right? So Shammai is the paradigm of tradition. Hillel all of a sudden is introducing some level of innovation in halacha. But the Gemara ends off, the kicker is, you can't forget about tradition. So even though we want to say, use your brain, use your logic, tradition still is really essential and really important. Even according to Hillel, you can't have one without the other. Unclear, according to Shammai, tradition might be alone. You might only need tradition. And you can't have any sort of logical deductions. It's all about tradition. According to Hillel, you can have logical deductions, but you also need tradition. So this is part one in terms of these, and these streams of thought will continue throughout the generations. Do I rely more on tradition? Do I rely more on logical deductions? deductions. Okay, next part. I have it here as part three because I counted the origin stories as part one. So next theoretical, philosophical, and practical debate that gets back to the Shmaya and Avtalion story of Hillel's origin, who can be your students? If you remember from the first shiur, maybe it was the second shiur, I don't remember, but it was the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, I think it was our second shiur. What did the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah say? What were their three pieces of advice? Anybody remember? That's further down. That's right here, source number four. Heim Amru Shlosha Dvarim, just in case nobody remembered. Hevim Masunim B'din, should be deliberate in judgment. Then Midu Talmidim Harbe, you should have lots of students. And then Vasu Siag LaTorah. For our purposes, have lots of students. Does everybody agree to that? Is that a principle that we should all have lots of students? Look at source number 5 and 6. This is Avos Rabbi Nassan, which is a Chazal's commentary on Pirkei Avos itself. Sources 5 and 6 say, V'emidu tamidim harbe, shebeis shamai omrim. I just have the Hebrew here, I'll translate. Al yishna adam elamishu chacham v'anav. Uben Avos v'ashir. You want to have a student? There's a qualification. You got to apply. And what do you need? You need to be smart, you need to be humble, you need to have pedigree, you got to come from a lineage of people who know what they're doing, and you have to be rich. Right? It's almost like a shit-off resume. Right? This is what I need. And if you don't get in there, if you don't have these qualifications, I'm not teaching you. And so how many students would Shammai have? 1, 2, 5, 10? Right? He might not have accepted Hillel as a student. Right? Hillel didn't have money. Right. Okay. So let's listen. So let's keep going, and then we'll reflect. Beis Hillel says no. Beis Hillel omrim l'kol adam yishne. Teach everybody. Now, why? So what's the reason? So the source number 5 and 6 give two different reasons. Reason number one: sheharbe poshim hayu behem b'Yisrael. There's lots of sinners amongst the Jewish people. I'm not makabel, but there's lots of sinners amongst the Jewish people. V'niskarvu l'talmud Torah. We brought them in, we taught them some Torah, all of a sudden they became pious people. Right? If you have such an elitist tradition and you don't teach the people and you leave the people on the streets, you don't want to teach them Torah, yeah, what do you expect? Bring them in, teach them, and do a little kiruv. And now that all of a sudden they start following the Torah. Source number 6, similar concept. V'emidu tamidim harbe. Beis Shammai says, Ein shonen elok sherim, ne'avos, ve'sel omrim l'kol adam. So it's the same machlokes. Do you teach everybody or only a few select few? And here the reason for Beis Hillel is different. Mashaloh, so the mashal, the parable, is Le'isha Shimusheves Tarnagolas Ala Beitzim Mitoch Harbe Himotzia Ma'ad Mitoch Ma'ad Enamotzia Klum. So if you have a chicken and you have eggs, so if you only say, I'm going to make the chicken have 10 eggs and I'll call it a day, then what's going to happen? So, three are going to be good, and 7 aren't going to be good. So you're going to end up only having 3 eggs at the end of the day, right? So what's the nimshal? What's the lesson here? So if you teach 10 people, so you'll have 2 or 3 people. If you teach 100 people, so you have 20 or 30 people. So here it's a different message. The first message of Beis Hillel seems to be that through the teaching of everybody, there's just this revival, this religious revival, which is great. The second message is more of a practical, a functional answer, is that we need people to know stuff. So am I going to be able to hit everybody? Am I going to be able to get to every single student and inspire them and teach them, and then they're going to know what they're talking about? No. But at least I'll get more than you, Beis Shammai. Right? So here again, this is just a pedagogical machlokes. Beis Shammai would say, I want to only teach the best because I only trust teaching the best. And remember, as I'm sure some of you are thinking right now, we're going to see this machlokes later down the road. Right? Where's the machlokas laser? So Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Lazar Beshua, that whole story in the Gemara of Brachos, is Rabbi Gamliel says, this is again, 150, 200 years later, I'm only teaching the best, somebody who's tocho kibaro, their outsides have to be like their insides, and I'm not going to let anybody else in. All of a sudden, he makes fun of Rabbi Shua, they kick him out, and they bring in Rabbi Lazar ben Azaria, it's the famous, the Gemara and the Haggadah says Harani Kiven Shivim Shana. It's referencing that Gemara that he all of a sudden becomes has white hair, and they put in lots of benches into the Beis Medrash and they let everybody in. Right? And it's the same discussion. Do I only teach a select few, or do I teach the masses? I don't know. The Gemara seems to, the redactors of the Gemara, the people compiling the Gemara, seem to take the side of teach everybody. I think that especially now with, you do, No Child Left Behind, even in yeshivas, you teach everybody. You do. We don't say I'm only going to teach a select few. You might have an advanced class and a non-advanced class, but you teach everybody. That seems to be the sides that we've come on, but I think that the message and the philosophical background is, I think Shammai has a point, but we might disagree with it. And we might say we don't want it, we'd rather be more like Beis Hillel. Okay, so that's in terms of the elitist versus universal education. Next part, part four. Any quick, brief questions on that?
Yeah, was Shammai part of the Shammai Rav Talion?
So the way Pirkei Avos presents it is that it says Hillel and Shammai received it from Shammai and Avtalion. So at least from that message, from the Gemaras, I don't think you see that. From the Gemaras, you see more that Hillel was a Talmud of Shammai Avtalion. But apparently, at least according to Pirkei Avos, that Shammai also received some stuff, the tradition from Shammai Avtalion. And I think that's... They're both within that area.
So then there wouldn't be anything about tradition, because the tradition of Shammai would have had the same, and Hillel would have the same source of tradition. And so Shammai could have argued with him and say, listen, I heard it this way, and you're wrong.
Right, so there's a question about how you hear things, and there's a question about whether or not I can innovate. Rabbi Benjamin Lau, who we've referenced almost every single shir, and this shir itself also is heavily based on his sefer, the sages. So he argues that that Hillel actually, his whole type of innovation stems from Shammai and Avtalion. That whole concept of logical deduction stems from Shammai and Avtalion. Again, I think there's just different. You're going to find different paths. And different people are going to hang their hat on tradition, and people are going to hang their hat on innovation. Okay, moving forward. Character, yeah, quick.
Everybody has a few, according to the Torah, the men to learn.
Right.
Why can't it be, and why can't it be this view, everybody according to their level? There are those that should go in there and go for the weapon, and there are those that should be brought up a higher level for being complete ignoramuses, because otherwise it'll get diluted, and eventually it'll
So the question for the recorder here is that everybody has a chi, all men have a chi of Talmud Torah, so why does it mean we should teach according to the level? It's true. I mean, that's what Hillel would say. Shammai would say, okay, nice, go home, say Shema, and learn your little bit of Torah, but that doesn't mean that you have to, and I'm saying this in a sort of a harsh way, that doesn't mean you have to, what's the right word here?
Inclusive.
It doesn't mean you have to ruin my base medrash. Right? So you want to learn a little bit here and a little bit there. This is Harvard, right? So yeah, you want to go to a community college? Go to a community college, but this is Harvard. This isn't for you. Okay, only because it's you. Yes. Quickly. One second. Yeah.
Now, in the Haggadah, we have differentiated instruction.
Correct.
Depending on
right. Just remember, the Haggadah is later, right? So this is a stream that's coming from before. And again, I think that it's true that on the side of history, we have sided on teaching everybody, and now that's even expanded in the last century, that it even includes women. And usually, before the 19th century, we didn't, that's not just in Jewish thought, that's in regular secular world. Women were uneducated for most of them for a long, long time, and that's changing. And then, right, and even special needs student. Everybody has an IEP. Everybody needs to be taught something. Again, all this is true. Let's save it, okay? So write it down. We'll take the questions at the end. I want to keep going because I know I end up rushing at the end. So let's see part four. We have a lot to do, and then we'll take the comments and questions at the end. Part four, character and social sensitivity. Source number seven here is a famous Gemara in Erevin that talks about who do we follow halacha l'maisa. So you have all these disputes between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Who do we paskin like? What's the halacha? Who is the halacha according to? So, reading a little bit in the English here to save some time. Rabbi Abba stated in the name of Shmuel. Excuse me. For 3 years there was a dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The former asserting the halacha is agreement with our views, and the latter contending the halacha is in agreement with our views. I'm right. I'm right. You're wrong, right? So, who do we follow? So, a bas kol, so a heavenly voice comes down and announces. This is very important. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Both the words of Beis Hillel and the words of Beis Shammai are the words of the living God. Meaning, they both have merit. They both have truth. But that doesn't mean we know who to follow. So, they're both the words of God. But the halacha is in agreement with the ruling of Beis Hillel. Why? If they're both true, on some broad level, why do we follow Beis Hillel? So since, however, both are the words of the living God, what was it that entitled Beis Hillel to have the halacha fixed in agreement with their rulings? So how do we establish halacha, Beis Hillel versus Beis Shammai? One makes more logical sense. One seems to be, you know, people followed it. How do we figure out who's right? This is a huge lesson. Because they were kindly and modest. That's it. We follow Beis Hillel because of their character. They were kind and modest. They studied their own rulings and those of Beis Shammai. They learned both sides. This is tremendously important for any discussion nowadays on disagreements, political disagreements, religious disagreements. Beis Hillel thought they were right. They thought Shammai was wrong. But what did they do?
They studied
all sides. And were even so humble as to mention the actions of Beis Shammai before theirs. They even spoke about Beis Shammai's opinion before their own. This teaches you that he who humbles himself, the Holy One, blessed be he, raises up. And he who exalts himself, the Holy One, blessed be he, humbles. From him who seeks greatness, greatness flees. But him who flees from greatness, greatness follows. And we're going to see this later on. There's a Mishnah in Perkei Avos that reflects this. This is Hillel. Next, flip the page. Next page. Source number 8. What specific issue?
Yes.
So what specific issue were they talking about when the Baskel came out? I don't know. I mean, I looked at the Gemara. The impression I got was that this is just a broad thing. This is what they fought about. The subsequent Gemara right after that says that they fought, that there was a machlokes, but I think this was going on everything, not just on one machlokes. I was going to bring it in, but it's sort of a side topic. I'll just raise the question. It was a philosophical dispute. Is it better for man to have been born or not have been born?
Yeah.
Right? So Beis Hillel says better to be born. Beis Shammai says better not to be born. So that's for another time. But that's the dispute that comes right after this. But I think this statement is for a broad, every Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai disagreement. Source number 8. We're not going to read this whole thing inside. This is a really, really long Gemara. But this is also a famous Gemara where you have this Gemara in Shabbos that talks about the Ger that comes and asks Hillel, so I stood on one foot, etc. So we're going to excerpt a little bit here. But before we get to that Gemara, the first section here talks about a very interesting story where somebody took a bet and they said, I bet you I can get Hillel angry. So two people take a bet, I bet you I can get Hillel angry. And the guy takes on the bet and he goes and he knocks on Hillel's door. It's Erev Shabbos. Hillel's taking a shower, he's taking a bath, whatever it was. And Hillel comes and answers the door, he puts on his robe, and the guy asks him a question. And the guy basically chose the stupidest questions that you could possibly ask. If you skim through it, he asks him here, why are the heads of the Babylonians round? Right? So if anybody knocks on my door in Erev Shabbos and asks me any questions of this sort, I don't think I will pass the Hillel. Maybe I'll try, now that I know the Gemara. So Hillel says, my son, you have asked a great question. And he gives him an answer. And then the guy goes away and comes back a little bit later. And, you know, Hillel goes back to the shower. He comes back out. He knocks on the door. So he says, what do you ask? So he says, why are the eyes of the Palmyrians, who is a sect at that time, bleared? It's okay. He gives him an answer. Goes back to the shower. Guy knocks 5 minutes later. And he says, why are the feet of the Africans wide? And he gives him another answer. And he says, I have many questions to ask, but I'm afraid you're going to become angry. So Hillel sits down and says, don't worry about it. You know, ask whatever you want. And the guy says, are you the Hillel who they speak about, who's so, you know, great, sage amongst us? And he says, yes. And he says, well, you know, you just cost me $400, right? Because I lost the bet. He couldn't get him angry. He tried as hard as he could. He couldn't get him angry. And Hillel says, good, it's worth it that you lost your money and that nobody thinks that Hillel would lose his temper. Okay, that's story number one. Story number two is right underneath that. Don't turn the page. Right underneath that says a certain heathen. So this is the famous story. Tanu Rabbanan, Maisi Benachri Efek Shebalik Neshamai. So the non-Jew comes before Shammai and says, how many Torahs do you have? He says, two. We have the Torah Shebal Peh and the Torah Shebichsav. The written Torah and the oral Torah. Amar Lo, he says, I believe in the Torah Shebichsav. I don't believe in the Torah Shebal Peh. Convert me on condition that I only accept the Torah Shebichsav. So what's Shammai's response? Get out of here. Stop bothering me. Garba. He gets angry at him. And he Votziu Benazifa. He throws him out. Throws him out on the street. Comes before Hillel, tells him the whole story. Hillel says, come back tomorrow. Comes back tomorrow. And he says, you know, it's the whole Aleph Bet thing, we're not going to get into the story, but basically Hillel had the patience, ended up getting, you know, the guy became converted, and he even accepted the oral Torah because Hillel gave him the time of day and gave him the, you know, that humility and patience of Hillel. And the next story, Shuv Maisa ben Achriachad, another person wanted to convert, comes before Shammai, he says, convert me on condition that you I'll convert on condition that you teach me the whole entire Torah while you're standing on one foot. So what did Shammai do? Throws him out. He hits him with a stick, right? Goes before Hillel. And what does Hillel say? Famously, well, in its negative sense, what you don't want done to you, don't do to your friend. Okay? Again, Hillel's patience. This is the third story. We're not going to go into it. It's the same idea. Shammai is angry. Shammai is not patient. Shammai, think of it. This all makes sense. Shammai's like, I don't want to teach everybody. I only want to teach people who are interested. You're coming to me, and you say, I mean, sometimes I get questions like, people coming who really don't want to follow what you tell them, and they don't really care, or they sort of like, unless you tell them exactly the way they want to hear it, they're not going to listen. And do you have patience with a person like that who's coming and sort of being chutzpahdik in their questions, and they don't really care about what the law is, or do you have patience? And we try to follow Beis Hillel. You have patience. You don't kick people out just because they're a little bit chutzpahdik. Finally, last section. Flip to the last page, part five. Between sacred and secular. So we're going to briefly see three separate cases where Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai disagree as to how we divide between what's holy and what's profane. Do we separate the two that they don't meet at all, and what's holy is holy and what's profane is profane, and maybe you got to do what you got to do, but it's profane and I don't really care about it and I don't want to talk about it and I don't want to know about it and I want you to do whatever you got to do quickly and don't, that's not a holy thing. We'll see what I'm talking about in a second. Or is that the profane, the secular, can become holy? Beis Shammai, as you could probably guess, says we separate the two completely. Beis Hillel says we integrate the sacred and the profane. We're going to see it in three different contexts. First, in terms of Shema. So the Mishnah in Brachos says, Beis Shammai Omrim, Be'erev kol adam yatu v'yikro, Be'boker yamdu, Shenemar v'shach v'chol v'kumecha, Beis Hillel Omrim kol adam kore kedarko. When we say Shema, how do we say it? In what's our physical presence state when we're saying Shema? Beis Shammai says, when it comes to the morning, you got to get up. You got to proclaim the Shema. Beis Hillel says, whatever you're doing, you're lying down, you're sitting, you're reading, you're relaxing, it doesn't matter. You say Shema Kedarko, whether you're lying down, you're sitting, it doesn't matter. Or standing. Beis Hillel, Shenemar v'lech chabaderach, imkein lamanar v'shech v'kmecha, etc., etc., etc. There's some halachic dispute. Now, you could understand this dispute as to whether or not, according to Beis Shammai, you have to literally stand in the morning and lie down at night. It's just a technical dispute based on the words. Because what do the words say? B'shach b'cha means to lie down. Ukumatha means when you stand up. So Beis Shammai takes it literally. You got to actually stand, and you got to actually lie down. Morning stand, night lie down. Beis Hillel doesn't take it literally, and he says that you can read whatever you want, whenever you want. So what does it mean, whatever body position you're in? So what does it mean, b'shachlo v'kumecha? The time that you get up and the time that you go to sleep. So you could read that as a sort of a dry technical dispute. Rabbi Lau, and I think brings a bunch of sources which I've left out except for one to sort of bring out the point, makes this into a broad philosophical dispute. It's not just a technical dispute as to how you read the psukim. It's a broad philosophical dispute as to how do we coronate God? How do we do Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim? How do we accept the yoke of heaven? According to Beis Shammai, Rabbi Lau argues, when we do Shema, it has to be this whole pomp and circumstance. It has to be this whole thing that we are separating our daily mundane life and we're taking a break from that and we're saying, I need to stand right now and I need to get dressed and I need to put on my fancy clothing. Again, not literally halakhically, but this is what I need to do and I have to make this whole big scene and coronate God. According to Beis Hillel, no. You coronate God when you're at work because it's similar to the Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditchev story, right? So there was somebody who was a wagon driver who had his tefillin on, and he was in the mud trying to get his wagon out of the mud, and somebody says to Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, he says, look at that guy, he's wearing tefillin while he's trying to get his wagon out of the mud. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak turns it around and says, look at that guy, he's wearing tefillin even when he's trying to take the wagon out of the mud, right? So do we take our sacred and infuse it into our mundane, or do we try to separate them completely? Shammai, Rabbi Lau argues, says that you need to separate the two. Hillel says you infuse the two. And source number 10 brings that out a little bit more. We're going to skip that, just take my word for it. And feel free to look at the sages. He has a bunch of pages on this specific topic. But let's take it for granted that that's true. Next section, B. Body and soul. This is a famous, another famous idea. I think I quoted in a drasha a few years ago. That's not why it makes it famous. But in the Avos Rabbi Nasan, in source number 11, it says, "V'chol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim." Everything you do should be for the sake of heaven. And the story is that Hillel was shahay Hillel yotze l'makom hayom l'lehechan atolah. So Hillel was going, and his students were a little bit curious. Where are you going? So he says, "I'm going to look at this language." Lasos mitzvah niolech. I'm going to do a mitzvah. So they were kidding and let him go. What mitzvah are you doing? And here Hillel, again, you can read it inside on your own. Hillel here says, I'm going to do the mitzvah of?
Going to the bathroom.
Going to the bathhouse, right? And I'm going to take a shower. That's what he's doing. How's that a mitzvah? Because I am taking my body that was created, B'Tselem Elokim, and just like, and he gives a mashal here, he says, just like if you have some sort of, in the Avodah Zarah world, you have some sort of statue, so what do you do with the statue? You got to clean it, you got to polish, you got to make it look nice. It's the same thing, we have a Tselem Elokim within us, the divine being is, God, we're created in the divine image, and we need to polish that. We got to look nice, we got to keep clean. Our body houses something that is sacred, and because of that, the infusion together of the sacred and the profane, I have to take care of my body. Look at the last line in that section. Shammai lo haya omer kach. Shammai didn't say this. Eliyaseh chavoseinu im haguf hazeh. You got to do what you got to do. Right? Don't try to say that taking a shower is a mitzvah. Why do you got to take a shower? So you don't stink. Okay, that's nice. It's not a mitzvah. Right? There's certain, we have to eat. Right, it's the same machlokas here. Again, you don't necessarily find it Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, but you'll find this pervasive throughout the generations. Is eating a mitzvah? Should I infuse my eating with something that's holy? Or do I say I eat because I got to eat and get it over with? And again, you'll find in the Hasidic realm that these secular things like Beis Hillel here become sacred. They become holy. Anything that has to do with the body, we infuse kedusha into it. So that's part.
Depending on your intent, when you eat, what your intention is to do mitzvah, to be strong, to be able to.
So yes, according to Shammai would say, apparently, according to this presentation of it, Shammai would say, no, I don't care what your intent is. This is your body. You got to sleep. Go to sleep, but get up. Don't think that sleeping is a mitzvah. I don't care what your intent is. You got to take care of your body. It's almost like Nebuch. We have this body. We have this guf, right? Why did God give us a guf? Why did they give us a body? He should have just given us a soul. It's almost like we have to, like, how do you view your soul and your body? Is it this diametrically opposed forces that we love one and we hate the other? Or that no, we have to learn how to combine the two together in one big happy family. And so again, this is a big philosophical type of debate that has practical ramifications. Finally, source C, Shabbos and weekday. Another famous Gemara, the Gemara in Beitza, says that when it came to Shammai, Kol Yamav Haya Ochel L'Chavod Shabbos, Matzah Behema Na Omer Zula Shabbos. Anytime Shammai would go throughout the week, he'd find an animal, he would say, oh, this is beautiful, this is a nice piece of steak, it's a nice brisket, I'm going to save it for Shabbos. Then the next day he went and found another piece of steak that was even better. Matzacheres Naimanu. He took the second and then he ate the first because he wants to save the best for Shabbos. Aval Hillel Hazaken Midacheres Haisa Lo. Hillel thought about it differently, had a different perspective. What did he do? Shekol Masav L'Shem Shemayim. Everything he did, even during the week, was L'Shem Shemayim, because it says Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. Basically, the idea here, again, broadening this theme, is that Shammai said, what's important? What's the most important thing? Shabbos. Weekdays? Blah. I don't care about weekdays. I'm not infusing any Kedusha in weekdays. The only Kedusha a weekday would have is if what? I tie it to Shabbos. And I say, I'm going to save this for Shabbos. Beis Hillel says, no. Every single day of the week. Baruch Hashem, Yom Yom. Every day of the week has the power to be sacred. Not just because of Shabbos, because inherently on its own. So these three sources together point, if you put them in this theme, point to the fact that these are another huge dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. How do you view the world? How do you view this tension, if it is a tension, maybe it's not a tension, between the sacred and the profane? Do you try to separate them as much as possible? Or do you try to infuse them and connect them as much as possible? So today, just summing up, we saw huge machlokuses between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel that are just broad and permeate and every single aspect of life. Do you of religious life? Do you follow tradition versus reason? Do you follow when you teach? Do you do an elitist tradition versus universal education? In terms of character, are you more patient? Are you more strict in terms of allowing people to do things that we would think are chutzpahdik or unacceptable? And finally, in part, the last part, how do you view the differences between the sacred and the secular? We're going to pause here. We're going to take two questions and then bench, and then we can take more questions afterwards. Yeah, Barry. Yeah.
That it may be concerned with the best way to preserve the Masorah.
Yeah.
That Beis Shammai, the elitist position is that you have to be very selective, and the other position is that you don't need to do that. And later in the Machlokas between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Lovitz and Azaria, the second opinion there is that mitoch shalol lishma bo lishma, that it's a more optimistic view of the Jewish people, that eventually they'll come round. You don't have to restrict it to the best or the richest or the smartest. I think that issue of the view of the Jewish people goes all the way back to Mitzrayim, Yetzias Mitzrayim, when Moshe is reluctant to appoint judges and has to do everything himself, and Yisro seems to have a more optimistic view and thinks that you can trust other people to do the litigation.
Yes, again, so Your point is well taken, that this even goes before Hillel and Shammai. This isn't just starting Hillel and Shammai. These are streams, these are tensions that we will, that I think every generation is going to have to struggle with. Okay, one more last point. You don't have to make a point. Okay, good. So next week we're going to take what we've learned about Hillel and Shammai and then see what they actually say in Pirkei Avos. We'll see that Hillel, some of his stuff does flow from what he says, from the sources that we've seen. We're going to see with Shammai, and again, if you want to take a sneak peek on your own, source number 13 actually quotes all of the statements in Pirkei Avos that we're going to read. Shammai is almost like, is that really Shammai said that? Right? Like, after what we've seen today, we would have expected perhaps Shammai to say something else. Okay, so we'll leave that as a teaser for next week. Thank you all. We will